Welcome to the 20 Minutes of Filler podcast, episode 42. My co-host Andy Lennox isn't with me here today, but in his place, I have a very special guest that I am super excited about. So we're going to get right into it so we can have lots of good conversation to keep you wonderful listeners engaged. So if you guys have been hanging around the gaming space at all for the last 20 years, you've heard of a little company called Game Right Games. And they were started in 1994, and they really make great games for kids and families that have this mass appeal while still creating games that connect with people in the hobby market. Some of these games that you may have heard of recently would be the mega hits Sushi Go, and as well as Matt Leacock's cooperative games Forbidden Island and Forbidden Desert. One of my favorites, Cube Quest, is a recent one that if you haven't tried, you need to get out there and try. Last year, one of the Spiel des Jahres nominees, Quix, Rory's Story Cubes series, as well as games like Gub and Loot. By Dr. Reiner Knizia, as well as lots of fun kids games like Sleeping Queens that my daughter's absolutely going crazy for, Slam Witch, Rat-a-tat-cat, Elephant's Trunk for the little ones, and Go Away Monster for even littler ones. We're going to talk about Game Right Games with the Director of Product Development and Marketing, Jason Schneider. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks so much for coming on and talking with me about Game Right. I'm a big Game Right fan.
I can hear it. I mean, just the way the introduction, I mean, you nailed it. You got everything right. I didn't have to correct one thing about it. So
awesome.
That's rare too. So you even spelled Game Right correctly, which I'm joking. I don't, this is a podcast, so but can't see how you're spelling it, but I'm assuming you spelled it correctly. Most people spell it wrong one way or another, but I'm guessing you get it just right.
Totally. I'm sure I'm perfect in every way, and that will be the way that I will continue for the rest of this 20-minute podcast. Well, Jason, so you are the Director of Product Development and Marketing. Can you talk a little bit about what you do, what that actually means?
Sure. It's a pretty broad-based job. I mean, I do everything from meet with game designers, inventors, reviewing concepts, to taking those concepts and going out and testing them with families and kids and gamers, to signing agreements with game inventors, to working with our game design team here on refining any games that we do license into use what the games are going to look like. I write the rules and the marketing copy. And then, once the games have made their ways to the shelf, part of my job is figuring out how we're going to get them into people's houses. So I'm figuring out interesting and innovative ways to connect with game players all around the world. So that's it in a nutshell. I mean, there's lots of nuances that happen on a day-to-day basis, but I would say that, given that we're a small company, I do wear lots of hats, which is good because it covers my bald spot well.
That's awesome. That really sounds to me like the good life. You're just having a blast. It sounds like doing cool stuff in the gaming space.
Totally. I mean, I'm sitting talking to you right now, and from my jacuzzi, holding onto my jacuzzi here. So it's a real, I live the lush life of the game publisher, let me tell you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you do have. I was doing a little bit of research, Jason, and I came across something really cool that you did before you were at Game Right. And I just wanted to talk about that for a second. Can you tell us a little bit about the previous position before coming to Game Right?
That I was an assistant plumber for the. No, I'm kidding. So I'm guessing you're referring to the time that I spent studying clowning. Is that what we're talking about, or was that? I don't know.
Well, that was cool. That's cool too. But I was referring to something to do with a big yellow friend of mine.
I've worked on the production team of Sesame Street for a few years. Yes,
dude. We could geek out. I could seriously geek out for the next 20 minutes just about that statement right there.
It was kind of. I think I was starstruck the entire time I was there, and I was there for a while. But when you get to work on the show that you grew up watching. And idolized. It was definitely the way that I liken it is that it's like getting your license and then your parents handing you the keys to the Tesla. It's like whatever, just you don't even know where to go from there. You've kind of hit the peak.
It's like you're playing pretend. Like
it really is. I mean, you know, after a while, you realize that, you know, the people there are just like you and me, and that we, you know, they've got their issues too. But at least for the first, you know, 6 to 9 months of being there, I kept having to pinch myself, going, "My gosh, like that's Big Bird, and that's Elmo, and those are Ernie and Bert." So it was a really great thrill, and I think it definitely, you know, helped to mold my future world of being involved in children's entertainment. And I think that I try to carry along a lot of the ethos from Sesame Street here at Game Right, in the sense that I think one of the things that Sesame Street does extremely well, as we know from even just currently how they operate, is they really connect with parents and kids on two levels. And so I think that's really important. I feel like there's a real something special about the way that when parents and kids can watch something or participate in something and both get something out of it, it's a much better product. It's a much better show, movie. And so I really try hard. I strive to find products that will have that same kind of idea that really was started back in the days of Sesame Street.
That's fantastic. I mean, I see that in Game Right. I mean, like that, and with Sesame Street, you know, that's one of the shows that I don't mind watching with my kids, because it's cute and it's entertaining, and there's just something magical about that. And in Game Right's games, I see a lot of those games connecting with the kids, but also not boring the parents to death. And that's a really, really cool thing.
That's right. I always say, like, I try to find games where parents don't have to cheat to lose. Because there's nothing worse than watching a parent kind of, you know, roll their eyes, check their phone, do other things while they're in the middle of playing a game, out of all things, with their children. So if the game is doing that, if it's driving them away, then it's not helping anybody, including our business, to keep them there. And, you know, I'm not going to lie and say that every one of our games hits that on all engines, but it's certainly the goal. And, you know, when we do pick games, they really have that in mind.
That's great. Well, before let's talk a little bit more about Game Right in a minute, but I just want to talk about you as a gamer. How did you, I mean, like, what is your history, like your brief history? Obviously this is a 20-minute show, but sure. What is your history with games, and like, what really connected you with games?
Sure. Well, I can't remember a day when I was a kid when there wasn't some kind of game being played at my house growing up. And I'll credit my parents for that. There was a big closet of board games. Now, this was back in the 70s and 80s, so the choices were a little bit more limited than they've been over the past 20 or so years. But even so, playing games from some of the, you know, some from our big competitors, some of the traditional tried and true ones, too, like, you know, checkers, chess. I remember playing Rummy Cube a lot. Card games were really big in my house. And then, so I did a lot of that. I mean, I can remember, I still have like memories of sitting and playing like even like a game of Payday or the Mork and Mindy game, as awful as it was. Just those moments of being able to sit down literally on the floor playing a game, rolling dice, cards, and interacting with my family. So I think there's been always some kind of game playing environment at my house growing up. And I think that parlayed itself a little bit into the world of RPGs when I was in middle school. I played D&D, or actually I got into a game called Top Secret, which was the espionage role-playing game of the time, which TSR put out. Nice. And then I kind of went more into the – I've always kind of stayed more towards casual games, which is why I feel like Game Right's been a good fit to me. So while I enjoy a good Euro game, I really feel my limit personally is like playing a game for like 60 to 90 minutes. So I have found one way or another different games that have brought me to that place in my life. You know, I always was a fan of good American-style party games. You know, ranging from Pictionary, Trivial Pursuit, all the way up. I remember there was a game called Oodles, which came out in like the 80s or 90s, which is like a trivia-based buzzing game that was a big hit in our house for many years. And actually, that makes me wonder, whatever happened to that game?
Yeah.
Google, what happened to Oodles? It was a big hit. I also was a big fan of Games Magazine.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
There was always a copy of that magazine, or several copies, lying around the house. And that was a go-to source for me to finding new and interesting things. I remember discovering Ace of Aces through that, which was like the two-player old-fashioned like dogfight, airplane dogfight with two books. Each person had a book, and you had a, you know, depending on what move you made, you moved your book to one page, then your opponent had to move a book to a similar page, and you got to see different angles. Interesting to find like really innovative, new and interesting mechanisms for games. And I think that, again, that's really helped play itself out in my current role. Way more information than you needed, but there you have it.
That's awesome. The Ace of Aces thing, I think I just picked up a used game from West End Games, and it was a Star Wars thing like that. Like it was a lightsaber duel or something where you each have a book and you turn to a certain page and see what happens.
That's so cool.
Yeah, like stuff that's unique. I mean, that would be risky in today's market, I think. You know, it's like it was like the Wild Wild West, people just doing cool, innovative things in the hobby space where you can play around.
Totally. I really like that. I like it when I like games that kind of push the envelope in one way or another, that give give some sense of familiarity, but also turns something on its head so that you're like, oh, I've never done this before.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I look for too. So talking about game right games, what in your mind makes a game right game?
Ooh. Tough question. Well, I think a little bit it's like what we discussed earlier. It's a game that really a family can play together. It's a game that doesn't exclude children, although it doesn't necessarily pander to them either. I mean, look, obviously when it comes to a preschool game, a game like Go Away Monster, or a game that clearly is like my first game, there's not a heck of a lot we can do to bring parents and make them feel like they're playing the best game of their lives. But I feel like for the most part, the goal is to really find games that everyone can enjoy or get something out of. The other thing is that they're games that are easy to teach. They don't take that much, you know, even if the rule book is 6 or 8 pages long, you kind of get it as you're going along pretty easily. And then also the games can be played in somewhere between 20 to 30 minutes. I mean, we're cognizant of the fact that for better, for worse, for the majority of Americans and for people around the world, like there just isn't an endless amount of time to play board games during the day. So we'd like to be, you know, respectful of people of other things to do with their time, and also that there's a lot of other things competing for their time. And so to kind of get in a really meaningful experience within 20 or 30 minutes.
That's awesome. That you just described like the heart of our podcast, like the easy to teach, less than 30 minutes. Like that is where I live with games. I occasionally will bust out a longer game and you know, a bigger experience and that's fine. But like my heart is with these small games because it's amazing how much meaningful content you can fit into a 30-minute game with simple rules, you know, because then it's not just about the game. It's about that experience with the people that you're with. And that's why I love games so much.
Yeah. Say when something is quote unquote a filler game, that's somewhat of a backhanded compliment for that game. To me, I take it on as a full on compliment. I don't see it, you know, some people bristle at the fact that, oh, it's just a filler game. It's not a real game. It's a filler game. But to me, we survive on filler games. That's not to say that a game like Forbidden Island or Forbidden Desert, which I feel are a little bit more content heavy, are filler. But I guess really, you know, I mean, we could debate what is a filler game.
Absolutely.
Whereas, most games obviously that take less than a half hour, that's the way that I look at it. But you can get some really great depth of it. I mean, people say like, you know, playing Forbidden Island, which does take about a half hour. I mean, it's like there's so much intensity in that 30 minutes that it's just not like a light fluff, breathe between two more deep playing sessions. There's a lot going on in that game that really does require more than just like sit back, drink a beer, have some pretzels and play on.
Absolutely. So one of the, I mentioned in the intro, like you guys are really good at, you make these games that appeal to the mass market, but also to the hobby market. And they're kind of two different worlds. So what do you think that Game Right does differently than other mass market companies that really kind of helps you to stay relevant in the hobby market?
Well, I am not giving away our secret mojo ingredient, which is sitting right in front of me. I'm staring at it and it is dictating everything. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I feel like we've been very fortunate to have made some great partnerships with not only game inventors, but other publishing partners throughout the world that have sort of, you know, without having us to define like we did today, what we do, get what we do, and are always showing us games that feel like they have the ability to grow into a wider market. We've, you know, I think GameRight didn't start off as a game company that was geared towards hobby gamers. Now, granted, GameRight's a little over 20 years old, and the hobby market was just kind of coming into its own at that point. I mean, you think about where Catan was and what that represented in terms of like the watershed moment for the hobby game market. So in reality, games that we produced were really geared towards toy stores. Mm-hmm. Because we found that there weren't a lot of games outside the tried and trues going through your specialty toy stores in the United States. And so our first game that really made it was Slamwich. And that was the first card game we published. You know, it's gone on to sell over 1 million units. It's been a staple. We've now heard people saying that they've now played it with their children. So, I mean, it's kind of reaching that classic status of, you know, a game that will probably be around for a while. But I think that's sort of what's kept us going, is that we've always had one foot in the toy business and in the bookstore business, and then also another foot in the hobby game business, because we know that there's a very strong and passionate community there, that when they love something, it definitely resonates beyond their doors.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some passionate people there that I think as a new teeny tiny small publisher, it's those really connected, deeply passionate people who have helped me to like spread what I'm doing to a bigger audience, you know? So
exactly. I will say, and I'll be the first to admit, there is a really healthy dose of luck that we've got in our experiences. I mean, I'll take, for example, a game that was not a big hit in the hobby market, but it turned out to be one of our biggest selling games, which is a game called In a Pickle. Mm. It's a party game. It's a, you know, it's a family communication game. But it did not, and if you were to go look at the Board Game Geek reviews on it, they're not stellar.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really maybe speak to the hobby game market aesthetic, but there's no denying its success in the overall marketplace. So there is that sort of dichotomy that we have in our company, where some games just do well because they hit the right note at the right time, mostly due to probably timing and luck, and nothing to necessarily do with first getting hitting all those marketing cues right on online, where you know we first get a hit within the hobby market and then take it to the next step. So I'm not saying that that's not always the case. I just think that there's more variety, there's more variance than I think people want to give credit to.
Sure. Yeah, there's different paths for each game almost.
Sure. Yeah, I 100% agree. You know, it feels like we've mostly looked at a singular path, but there's, I think, a number of different ones, and there's no wrong way of doing it. And I feel like once you start to go down the road of marketing, as long as you're committed to an understanding that you're sort of playing with a bunch of unknowns, that you may hit the right ones, you may hit the wrong ones, but you know, I can't tell how many great games that we've seen over our years have not made it, have not hit hit that Forbidden Island or Sushi Go level for reasons that I couldn't necessarily explain to you that are rational. I mean, for example, I don't know if you remember a game that we published a few years ago called Tiki Topple.
Oh, yeah.
A game that got rave reviews and won different kinds of awards, and we had licensed it all over the world, and yet did not get any significant traction in the United States when it came out, and it had great placement. Why? I don't know. I mean, you know, it was a great filler game. It had great components. The artwork looked great. It had everything that you thought would be like the touchstone of a classic GameRight game, and yet it did not hit You know, weekend Monday morning quarterback reasons forever. You know, what was it? Was it the packaging? Blah, blah, blah. But, and it's interesting, we're actually looking right now, possibly relaunching it. So,
nice. That's been on my list of games to find in the secondary market because I don't have that one.
There's a demand for it. So stay tuned because we, I'll say this too about us. We don't give up on a game just because it's not successful the first time through. We believe in it. We're going to stick with it.
That's cool. That's kind of one of my other questions I had in mind for you was you mentioned Tiki Topple as one, but is there another game that kind of went under the radar that you wish more people would have noticed that you really think shines?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on what, you know, under the radar means. I'll say, like, you mentioned our game Cube Quest, which I think is a brilliant game and has gotten so many, you know, people into it. But yet, it hasn't, like, hit that space where it should be, where, like, I feel like it should be in everybody's house because it's a fun game to play. There's a little bit of strategy. The flicking is really fun. So I don't know why that's not bigger. I mean, we did have a... you know, we did have some production glitches that early on, but I don't think that affected much in the way of, because the sales have been strong relatively, but it hasn't kind of broken out the way that Sushi Go has. And the other game I'll say along those lines is, again, a game that's done well, but I think should really be a bigger game is Gubs. Mm. We've seen, I mean, the game is actually slowly getting more momentum going, but I out of the gate there was just great response to it, and it just proves how difficult it is, even for games that have got great bones and great artwork, to really get people to pay attention to it. Now, I you know, it's you know, I'm fully cognizant aware that, like, not every game can get that level. I mean, the fact that we've had so many has been just, I'm honored, I'm flattered, I'm humbled by it, because most companies are lucky if they get one or two. And we've just been blessed with a number of games over the years that have stayed relevant. You know, I mean, as you know, too, there's this kind of cult of the new that happens in the gaming business, where everybody wants to pick up the new game and, like, oh, how about the game that's been out for 5 years that's been doing well? It's harder for that game to kind of continue to get upward momentum. And the fact that a game of ours does that still is truly amazing. Like Sleeping Queens, which is 10 years old, has been an upward trajectory for 10 years. And it's taken 10 years, but I feel like it's getting to that place where it will be around for, you know, at least another 10, if not more, because of how much the audiences for the games are growing.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the cult of the new thing, and that's one of the things that game companies have to do. I think it's just you gotta get those new games out there every year to keep people paying attention to and looking into those older games. And I know you guys just came back from New York Toy Fair a couple months ago, where your Facebook page was blowing up with some new releases. So
that's right.
Would you mind sharing a little bit about the games that are coming up this year?
Sure. Well, one of the games that's coming out that is actually just hitting the market now is called Super Tooth, which is a really fun dinosaur themed card game for ages 6+. Again, just the artwork is awesome. These very, very comical looking dinosaurs, and the gameplay is kind of fun too. It's a little bit of a press your luck and a set collecting game with these fun die cut dinosaur teeth that are in it. That's what you have to collect. The first player to collect 3 super teeth is the winner.
Awesome.
And then another game that's on its way here, and it should be out probably by June, is a game called Dragonwood. It's sort of an adventure style card and dice game. Neat, because you play adventurers and you're collecting number cards made up of different adventurers to defeat creatures in this land of Dragonwood. So the more cards you collect, the more dice you earn, and the dice you use to roll against each creature. And creatures can be defeated in one of 3 ways: by striking at them, by stomping on them, or by screaming at them. and those are actually corresponding to more or less like poker hands. So a strike is a straight. A stomp is a flush, I'm sorry, a stomp is of a kind, and a scream is a flush. So the more cards you can get in any of those three suits, each creature can be defeated by dice rolls. Really fun. Again, great family adventure style game. And then I'll mention one more, which is a game that really kind of steps out of the boundaries of traditional game playing, which is a game called Sneaky Cards. And the premise of this game is it's a game that you actually don't play sitting around a table. It's not even a game you play in your house. It's a game you play out in the world. You're going to buy a deck of cards, and each card has a unique objective on it. And to complete the objective, you have to do what it says on the card. And then the final part of the objective is to give that card away to somebody who is with you or near you when you complete the objective. So, for example, one of the cards is take a selfie with a stranger. You're out, you're at the mall, you're shopping, you've got this card, it says take a selfie with a stranger. You do just that. You approach someone, you take a selfie with them, then you pass that card along to them, and now they're in on the game.
Awesome.
And they've got to do the same thing. And all the cards are trackable, so you'll kind of be able to watch how your deck goes throughout the world. And there's different categories within the deck, from things like connecting like that selfie with a stranger to doing some altruistic things like buying coffee for someone, just random person behind you online, or give this card to the 10th person that you hold the door open for, or volunteer for a new organization you've never volunteered for before and give this card to someone that you meet along the way. So there's a lot, there's 54 unique objectives. It's a game, but it's also sort of an experiential experiment in a way I'm looking at it. But the opportunity is to really connect and to do good. The tagline is play it forward. I mean, you're really like you're spreading joy by being this anonymous merrymaker.
Wow, that sounds awesome. That's such a neat thing. Like games can make a difference on a lot of levels, and this one is taking that very, very seriously. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, and again, it could either be a huge, I think it has the potential to really take off and be huge, or, you know, if it fails to catch on, it may not, but the initial response has been really, really strong, and it's going to be available at lots of major retailers in the summer or into the fall, so so keep your eye out for it.
For sure, absolutely. But before we wrap up, one of the questions we like to ask all of our guests is a game recommendation. So in your case, this would be a game that Game Right doesn't publish that you would recommend to people looking for an engaging experience, plays under 30 minutes with a kind of a wide audience. So that filler level game. And I know this might be strange. Maybe you're going to be talking about a competitor's game, but what's just a game that you love that you weren't a part of that you would recommend to people?
Ooh. Really good question. Tough one. I've got to like now narrow it down. I'm quickly looking, scanning through my office. If only you can see the things that I have got here in front of me. A game that I really enjoyed thoroughly was 8-Minute Empire.
Oh, yeah.
Which just does everything that a Game Right game should do in just the right amount of time and, great area control and collection. It just has all those bits. And the fact that it has such a great timer built into it that, you've got to collect X number of cards. Also, Ryan did a great job, who is Red Raven Games. He's got the full meal deal. He's a great illustrator. It's a game that I've definitely brought out time and time again and have had nothing but positive responses from families who played it with me.
That's a great recommendation. I've really enjoyed his art style and his game
design. Yeah, and I mean, even the Legends, which takes up the next level, also great too. So
I like to use that one for bringing out to people that maybe I want to introduce, like, okay, the German kind of Euro game idea to, right? Because that's not overwhelming. And we're like, hey, we're going to be done with this game in 15, 20 minutes, and you're going to get the feel of kind of what this scene is about,
Absolutely. I think that's spot on. I think there's something about that, again, looking at it from the view from inside the hobby market, nothing special. But for most people who I bring it to, they've never played a game like Puerto Rico. They never played Forbidden Island, never played anything that's even remotely like that. So from their vantage point, it's like I have to think about it with their eyes to play a game like 8-Minute Empire. Probably, reminds them of playing Risk for all that we know. Even though, again, there's not a lot that it has in common other than little cubes and the map part, but like it does, well, it's area control. But again, the fact that they can do it in such a short amount of time, I think, is awesome.
Right, and maybe people don't end up in tears like they might at the end of a Risk game.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, Jason, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to chat with me and share what's going on with Game Right Games. You guys have a website, it's just Game Right Games.
GameRight.com.
GameRight.com.
Or you can find us on Facebook, Facebook.com/GameRight, or follow us on Twitter, @GameRight. We're, you know, we try to be amusing. We try to bring some fun things to the table beyond our typical promotional blather.
Awesome. Well, that's good. Of all the ways that you can contribute, I'll be listening. And I want to thank all of our listeners for checking us out, for spending time with us today. We you can subscribe to us in iTunes. We are a part of the Dice Tower Network. So if you want to hear great podcasts, go over to dicetowernetwork.com. Thanks for listening. And until next time, get out there and play some great little games.